at the Barley House. And, of course, we are supporting our friends, Real American Freestyle, as well. But we got a big Buckeyes game to get into and a big event this weekend coming up as well on Saturday. For more, we go out to the fan hotline. Let's talk to Joshua Perry, NBC Sports, Rush of the Field podcast, of course, a national champion with the Buckeyes as well. Joshua, how you doing today?
I'm doing well. I appreciate you guys having me on.
Thanks for being here. All right, let's get into this. Arch Manning versus Julian Sayin, the quarterback matchup. What are you expecting here for the Buckeyes and Julian Sayin in particular?
Well, for Julian, I think the key for him is to not feel like he has to go out there and be a hero. And it's something Ryan Day has talked about, and I think it's a tough thing for a young quarterback, and especially when you got the keys to an offense like Ohio State where there's so much firepower, you think you got to make every play. And for him, it's just about going through the progression, making the right read, and getting it to whichever playmaker the ball should go to. So he's got to manage the emotions of running out there in that stadium, and it feels great to be out there. But, you get a little bit of anxiety sometimes, first time going out as a starter. And then he's just got to rely on his teammates there. The interesting thing is that communication between Julian and Ryan Day and Brian Hartline, the new offensive coordinator play caller for Ohio State. Going to be a lot of maybe newness, some feeling out probably early on in the game. And I'm most curious to see how that goes. What is their communication like? How do they all make adjustments? And ultimately, what's the play calling rhythm?
Joshua, on the other side, that quarterback battle against Arch Manning, I mean, for him to be able to live up to that hype, he'd have to throw 6 touchdown passes for 800 yards in this game. But how has Ohio State prepared for the unknown of Arch Manning in this matchup?
Yeah, I mean, there's a little bit out there, right? Like, we saw him last year. Ohio State saw him in the semifinal and knocked him out of the game there. But he's a guy who clearly has the pedigree. He's got a great arm. He's got some mobility as well, which is something that they have to keep an eye on. But Arch Manning's also going to be going out behind an offensive line that's replacing 4 or 5 starters. So there are going to be some questions there, too, with Texas's offense. Now, they're extremely talented. Their running back room is stacked. They had injuries last year, and those guys are healthy now. They've got a really good wide receiver room as well. So he's got the weapons there. I'm curious what the trenches look like. For Ohio State, you have to understand when you're going against a younger quarterback, there are going to be a lot of things that he hasn't seen out there. And it's one of the reasons why they like Jim Knowles, and it's one of the reasons why they brought in Matt Patricia to replace him. These are guys who can be multiple with their defense. They can show you multiple looks in the front. They can give you different pictures in the secondary. And ultimately, without getting too cute, because Ohio State's got great players on defense, they have to change up the looks to put a young quarterback in conflict on the road. Again, I look at the quarterback paired up with the play caller. Steve Sarkisian's one of the best sequential play callers in college football. So the plan is going to be really good for the Texas offense. But Ohio State has to be able to show different pictures to a quarterback who hasn't played a ton of football in college yet. And that'll be one of the keys to success.
What does the backfield look like for Ohio State in this game? It's interesting to me because everyone's talking about defense and the run game being something that matters early on for both sides. What does this look like?
It is going to be a question, right? Like, I think that's one of the big things that I'll have my eye on early in the game. As I mentioned, you got all the talent on the outside. You got Max Clair, who came in at tight end for Ohio State, and I think he's got to be a big feature. But one of the things that ended up being a difference maker for Ohio State, particularly in the playoff run, was Tre'Davious Henderson was a home run from any point in the field at any moment. He could hit you the big play and get you that momentum. And Quinshon Judkins was very similar, but also was going to get you the really tough yards there. So what does Peoples look like? Heard some good things about him, heard some good things about Donaldson, but ultimately it's a big unknown. And for Ohio State, you cannot be in a position where you feel like you have to drop back constantly because you're behind the sticks. Texas has guys up front that can make your day miserable if you're going to be in drop back passing mode. So this has to be a complementary game plan. And that means that these guys that we don't know a ton about right now have to show up in a big way.
I also wanted to ask you, Joshua, what you made this week out of the whole Dave Portnoy pregame thing, banned from Ohio Stadium, not banned from Ohio Stadium. Where do you fall on that whole spectacle?
So it's an interesting thing. I've talked to a lot of people about, you know, what they think about it. And where I've landed is media companies are notoriously awful communicators. They don't talk to production, like the top people, the suits don't talk to production very well. Production sometimes gets a little bit lost in the sauce with talent. And ultimately, you have an idea of what's getting ready to happen, and it's not exactly the thing that was talked about. So I'm sure Fox had conversations with the Big Ten schools when they hired Portnoy, and I'm sure a lot of that conversation was, this guy says really inflammatory things about our schools, and we don't really want him anywhere around. And I'm of the opinion that not everybody who's hired by a network deserves to have a press pass. Like, he's not a traditional analyst in the sense that he is objective and unbiased, right? So, like, I get that whole part of it. I think there might have been a miscommunication about what exactly his role was going to be from the people at Fox. I don't know this to be true, but it wouldn't shock me if that was the case. So now you get all these things lost in translation, where maybe Fox didn't define what he was going to be doing when they went inside the stadium. And then the Big Ten schools, I'm sure, had some pushback on this addition of talent who is inflammatory. And now you get a scenario where the guy's calling an emergency press conference because he knows that this is going to be something that he can create engagement with. And this whole story is overblown. The biggest thing to me is they bring in somebody who is an independent media influencer type. And that certainly has a role in today's day and age of media. It also doesn't mean that guy has to be a fixture at the desk. We saw when Fox had Clay Travis, who was kind of a similar thing. He would be out in a parking lot somewhere and they'd buzz him in for a few minutes during the show a couple of times. And that was that. That was how I saw the Portnoy thing going. And it was kind of insane to me when I saw this report that he was mad he couldn't be at the desk. I never thought that was an option for a guy like him to begin with.
Joshua Perry, NBC Sports Rushing the Field podcast, of course, a national champion with your Buckeyes as well, joining us here on 92.3 The Fan. All right, let's get into the idea of just how hard it is to cap this game, because I think it's an incredibly difficult thing to try to do. 26 new players between the two rosters, drafted to the NFL last year, 8 new starters for Ohio State. How would you even begin to try to look at this game?
Well, I would look at it like this, is the array of different outcomes I think is vast in this game. I could see a game where Texas starts to run away with it. I could see a game where Ohio State starts to run away with it. And I could see a game where either of these teams wins in a close one, because there are a lot of unknowns here, but you have very talented coaching staffs with really good players at their disposal. So I think the biggest thing that I'm watching for on the Ohio State side is, with the new coordinators, with new play callers and some new faces out there, what does it look like? This is not exactly the matchup that you would want with all the changes in week one, but here we are, and I think we're all excited about it. But they have to manage the newness extremely well. Good thing they're playing at home. You don't have to worry about going on the road and dealing with all that. That's something to see there. And then, as I mentioned, you know, if Arch has to drop back, if Ohio State's able to build a good wall up front and stop the run, can you get after some of the new players that they have on the offensive line? Can you create maybe some of those havoc plays, a strip sack? Can you force them into a bad throw that turns into an interception? The edge to me here is, I think Ohio State has the two best players in the United States of America. Jeremiah Smith, who only had 3 yards in the semifinal game, but is probably looking to get his get back. And then you've got Caleb Downs on the defensive side of the ball, who's one of the smartest players I've ever interacted with. And if those two guys can be the leaders that we know them to be, if those two guys can create some of the big plays that we know that they can create, that's where the game swings in a big way for Ohio State. So as I look at it, I actually think that Texas is in a better position to win this game, just less turnover with the coaching staff. You've got some of the familiar faces, particularly on their defense, that I think can be big game wreckers. But Ohio State's got the X factor there, where they have the two best players in the United States.
What you just mentioned there with Jeremiah Smith and those 3 yards, that really feels like what Texas fans have clung to in this matchup. So how does Ryan Day, how does Julian Sayin make sure that they're getting Jeremiah Smith the ball early and often throughout this matchup?
So I'm gonna be that guy and say, I don't know if you have to do that. They found a way to win it the last time without doing it. Texas had a great game plan. You find a way to get at least two players over top of Jeremiah Smith, maybe even a third player, depending on what the coverage looks like, and you take him out of the game plan. But if I'm Ohio State, I'm saying, okay, we've got Carnell Tate, who's is a great player for us, who's going to be a great player this year. You've got Brandon Innes, who is a captain, and everybody's talked about how he's ready to take a leadership role. And then I mentioned Max Clair at tight end, who's the best tight end that Ohio State's had in a little while here. You get the ball to those guys, right? Like, if Jeremiah's not open, you don't have to force him the football. And he is an unselfish player in the sense that he knows that whatever he has to do to make the team successful, and if that's being a decoy at times, he's going to do it if they can get the win. So you'd like to see him get involved and make some of those big plays. Like, it makes us all feel good. But the reality is, if the game plan says that Jeremiah's covered, you got a whole bunch of other guys who are really, really good players that you just get the football to.
I want to jump a little bit deeper, Joshua, with you into the run game. Obviously, Judkins up here in Cleveland with us and the Browns, Travion Henderson in the National Football League as well in New England. How's Ohio State going to do it on the ground?
So I think last year, one of the biggest things that Ohio State had was not just the talent of the players, Judkins and Henderson, you mentioned, it was the utilization. It was a scheme in the run game, and that was a lot of Chip Kelly's influence, where you got guys on the move. They had pullers in there. He found creative ways to create bigger surfaces and blocking matchups that he liked. And then the other part was Travion Henderson was one of the best that I've seen a little while in catching the football out of the backfield, whether it's the swing passes, whether it's the screens, or they motion to empty, and they put him in the formation to run a route. So for Ohio State, I think that it's not just, you know, can those players make the plays, but how do you create an advantageous situation to where you feel like you can gain a numbers advantage in the run game? How do you find a matchup maybe in the pass game where you get those guys involved as an extension of the run game? Quick out of the backfield, throw it to them, give them some space, and let them go there. That's, to me, where the evolution has to continue to come. I thought it was really good last year. In the sense that they didn't just rely on guys to be able to make players miss or run somebody over. They said, we're going to find ways to highlight you within scheme. And I think that's where this is a full coaching staff effort, where Brian Hartline, we've talked about, is a new play caller, a new offensive line coach that they brought in, was also a coordinator. And I think that was on purpose, because you want a guy whose expertise is in the front of the offense. So I really like the idea of what Ohio State staff can do to help elevate the running back room.
Joshua, when you were winning a national title, I mean, you guys had no room for error. That was just the reality of it. You had to win every single game, and you had to do it with style points as well. Do you like the idea that even like an early season loss to Texas, it's just not as punitive anymore as what it used to be? Is that a good thing or a bad thing for the sport?
I'm 50-50 on it. I'm really not 50-50 on it. I like the old way of college football. I honestly, we go back to the BCS where there were two teams that got to play for it at the end of the year. I wouldn't even be mad about that. The playoff has done a lot of great things. We were a beneficiary of it when we won in 14. We were the last team in there. We had the early season loss that we had to overcome, but we still had our shot to compete for a championship. Where I think I'm hurting right now is we try to assign value to every game to say that, like, oh, you know, this is an important game and this is an unimportant game. And maybe if we put more teams in the postseason, we can make some of these games more important during the regular season. And my argument to that is Ohio State-Texas, which is one of the most anticipated week one matchups that we've ever seen, might not mean that much in terms of outcome, because either one of those teams can lose and still make it into the college football playoff at the end of the year. Ohio State-Michigan as a rivalry doesn't feel as punitive to the loser, because that team can make it into the college football playoff at the end of the year. Now, where did the value go and where are the games more important? Like, I don't know, Nebraska's playing Rutgers in week 11, and like Nebraska's right on that edge of being, you know, the last at-large team, and we're like, oh, this is a really important game for Nebraska. And I just kind of sigh a little bit, because it's like, congratulations, but like, that's also a blue blood team that hasn't lived up in the last three decades of college football. Like, I don't think we need to add importance to their games. They just need to get better as a program. So all of that to say, I like watching all the games, man. I'm a college football junkie. I would watch them even if they were playing on a blacktop somewhere. I don't need somebody to tell me the games are important. I don't need a bigger playoff to make it feel more important, but I'm going to enjoy all of them regardless. So that's my answer on that.
Everybody has talked about, Joshua, just how important this game is for Ohio State, for Texas. We were debating right before we went to break. Can you remember a week one game as big as this one?
No. Like, no. And I've been trying to think about it as we're preparing to go on air here. We've got a show tonight on Peacock, and then we've got our primetime spot tomorrow on NBC. And you know, we're talking about the magnitude of this week one, because it's not just Ohio State, Texas. Like, you've got Notre Dame playing Miami, and you know, you've got LSU playing Clemson. You got Florida State and Alabama, Florida State wants to be good again. Like, that'll be one of those games that we remember. But, like, just thinking about Ohio State, Texas individually, I'm not sure that I can remember a week one matchup that was this anticipated. But the week one slate generally, like, feels so big this year. So I'm excited to be a part of it in terms of the coverage. I'm excited to see, you know, who lives up to the hype early on in the season, you know, who's a team that we might have been too high on. And ultimately, this is a sport for overreactions. Like, who are we firing after week one because we're disappointed in the way that their team played? Like, that's what I'm here for. And so I'm excited to watch this whole weekend.
Joshua Perry, NBC Sports, Rushing the Field podcast, of course, won a national title with Ohio State as well, joining us here at 92.3 The Fan. Hey, you know, you mentioned some of those great games. We're going to be locked in on Nussmeier versus Klubnik, obviously LSU versus Clemson. We're focused on quarterbacks here in Cleveland, as you know. But tell me about that game. And I really do – I think Clemson's defense is going to be really good, and I can't find too many people that want to buy in on that with me.
No, I'm totally there. They've got breakout players on all levels – of the defense, a couple of like all American caliber guys that I'm really excited to watch there. And then for Clemson offensively, as much as we talk about like Ohio State's wide receiver room, Texas's wide receiver room, Clemson's got it back to where they once were with the wide receivers right now. As you mentioned, Klubnik, one of the top quarterbacks. I can't wait to see what that connection looks like. For LSU, I do think the big question for them is how much better their defense can be. They brought in Blake Baker a couple years ago, and he got them like a little bit better last year. But this is a year where they have to take a big step because they're kind of in for the title. They brought back Nussmeier. Like, they went hard in the transfer portal there. So this is one of those where the narratives on the coaches, I think, are as interesting as anything, where Brian Kelly, for some reason, can't win that early season big matchup, and he hasn't had that magic since the year that they went to the SEC championship. And Dabo was the guy who had lost his touch and didn't have the fastball anymore. And frankly, I think he is coaching a team that could be in the national championship game this year. I'm leaning towards Clemson to win this one. I like what they have. I really do think that they're a legit contender. And Brian Kelly, like, I don't know how he does training camp, but those guys are just not ready to play in week one, the big matchup. So I'm going with the Clemson Tigers in this one.
Josh, fantastic insight as always. We appreciate you giving us a few minutes, and we'll catch up with you later. Thank you.
All right. Appreciate you guys. Take care.
All right, great stuff right there with Joshua Perry. Check him out on NBC Sports, Rushing the Field podcast, and everything that he does. All right, we come on back. Want to hear from you guys. 216-474-0092. Is this game just too hard to be able to predict? It's Jonathan Pito and Nick Padone. We're at the Barley House with you guys right here on The Fan.